26. When Braun Lamia had been a child, her father a senator, and their home relocated, however briefly, from Lussis to the wooded wonders of Tau Ceti Center's administrative residential complex, she had seen the ancient flat film Walt Disney Animation of Peter Pan. After seeing the animation, she had read the book, and both had captured her heart. For months, the 5-standard-year-old girl had waited for Peter Pan to arrive one night and take her away. She had left notes, pointing the way to her bedroom under the shingle dormer. She had left the house while her parents slept, and lain on the soft grass of the Deer Park lawns, watching the milkish gray night sky of TC Squared, and dreaming of the boy from Neverland, who would some night soon take her away with him, flying toward the second star to the right, straight on till morning. She would be his companion, the mother to the lost boys, fellow nemesis to the evil Hook, and most of all, Peter's new Wendy, the new child friend to the child who would never grow old. And now, 20 years later, Peter had finally come for her. Lamia had felt no pain, only the sudden icy rush of displacement as the shrike's steel talon penetrated the neural shunt behind her ear. Then she was away and flying. She had moved through the datum plume and into the data sphere before. Only weeks before her time, Lamia had ridden into the Technocore Matrix with her favorite cyber puke, silly B.B. Serbringer, to help Johnny steal back his cybered retrieval persona. They had penetrated the periphery and stolen the persona. But an alarm had been tripped. B.B. had died. Lamia never wanted to enter the datasphere again. But she was there now. The experience was like nothing she had ever had with comlog leads or nodes before. That was like full stim-sim. Like being in a holodrama with full color and wraparound stereo. This was like being there. Peter had finally come to take her away. Lamia rose above the curve of Hyperion's planetary limb, seeing the rudimentary channels of microwaved data flow and tight-beamed comlink that passed for an embryonic datasphere there. She did not pause to tap into it, for she was following an orange umbilical skyward toward the real avenues and highways of Datum Plane. Hyperion space had been invaded by Force and by the Ouster Swarm, and both had brought the intricate folds and latticework of the datasphere with them. With new eyes, Lamia could see the 1,000 levels of Force data flow, a turbulent green ocean of information shot through with the red veins of secured channels and the spinning violet spheres with their black phage outriders that were the Force AIs. This pseudopod of the Great Web mega-datasphere flowed out of normal space through black funnels of shipboard forecasters, along expanding wave fronts of overlapping, instantaneous ripples that Lamia recognized as continuous bursts from a score of fatline transmitters. She paused, suddenly unsure of where to go, which avenue to take. It was as if she had been flying, and her uncertainty had endangered the magic, threatening to drop her back to the ground so many miles below. Then Peter took her hand and buoyed her up. "Johnny!"
"Hello, Braun."
Her own body image clicked into existence at the same second she saw and felt his. It was Johnny as she had last seen him, her client and lover. Johnny. Of the sharp cheekbones, hazel eyes, compact nose, and solid jaw. Johnny's brownish-red curls still fell to his collar, and his face remained a study in purposeful energy. His smile still made her melt inside. "Johnny!" She hugged him then, and she felt the hug, felt his strong hands on her back as they floated high above everything. Felt her breasts flatten against his chest as he returned the hug with surprising strength for his small frame. They kissed, and there was no denying that that was real. Lamia floated at arm's length, her hands on his shoulders. Both their faces were lighted by the green and violet glow of the great datasphere ocean above them. "Is this real?" She heard her own voice in dialect in the question, even though she knew she had only thought it. "Yes, real as any part of the datum plume matrix can be. We're on the edge of the megasphere in Hyperion space." His voice still held that elusive accent that she found so beguiling and maddening. "What happened?" With the words, she conveyed images to him of the Shrike's appearance, the sudden, terrible invasion of the Blade Finger. "Yes," thought Johnny, holding her more tightly. "Somehow it freed me from the Shrone loop and jacked us directly into the datasphere." "Am I dead, Johnny?" The face of Johnny Keats smiled down at her. He shook her slightly, kissed her gently, and rotated so that they could both see the spectacle above and below. "No, you're not dead, Brawn. Although you may be hooked to some kind of bizarre life support, while your datum plume analog wanders here with me." "Are you dead?" He grinned at her again. "Not any longer. Although life in a Shrone loop isn't all it's cracked up to be. It was like dreaming someone else's dreams." "I dreamed about you," Johnny nodded. "I don't think that was me. I dreamed the same dreams. Conversations with Maynard Gladstone. Glimpses of the hegemony government councils." "Yes!" He squeezed her hand. "I suspect that they reactivated another Keats hybrid. Somehow we were able to connect across all the light years." "Another hybrid? How? You destroyed the core template. Liberated the persona." Her lover shrugged. He was wearing a ruffled shirt and silk waistcoat of a style she had never seen before. The flow of data through the avenues above them painted both of them with pulses of neon light as they floated there. "I suspected that there would be more backups than Bibi and I could find in such a shallow penetration of the core periphery." "It doesn't matter, Brawn. If there's another copy, then he's me. And I can't believe he'd be an enemy. Come on, let's explore." Lamia held back a second as he tugged her upward. "Explore what?" "This is our chance to see what's going on, Brawn. A chance to get to the bottom of a lot of mysteries." She heard the uncharacteristic timidity in her own voice, thought. "I'm not sure I want to, Johnny." He rotated to look at her. "Is this the detective I knew? What happened to the woman who couldn't stand secrets?" "She's been through some rough times, Johnny. I've been able to look back and see that becoming a detective was, in large part, a reaction to my father's suicide. I'm still trying to solve the details of his death. In the meantime, a lot of people have gotten hurt in real life, including you, my dear."
"And have you solved it?"
"What?"
"Your father's death."
Lamia frowned at him.
"I don't know. I don't think so."
Johnny pointed toward the fluid mass of the datasphere ebbing and flowing around them.
"There are a lot of answers waiting up there, Brawn, if we have the courage to go looking for them." She took his hand again.
"We could die there."
"Yes."
Lamia paused, looked down toward Hyperion. The world was a dark curve with a few isolated data flow pockets glowing like campfires in the night. The great ocean above them seethed and pulsated with light and data flow noise, and Brawn knew that it was only the smallest extension of the megasphere beyond. She knew, she felt, that their reborn data plane analogs could now go places no cyber puke cowboy had ever dreamt of. With Johnny as her guide, Brawn knew that the megasphere and technocore were penetrable to depths no human had plumbed. And she was scared. But she was with Peter Pan at last. And Neverland beckoned.
"All right, Johnny. What are we waiting for?"
They rose together towards the megasphere.